Every single day I feel it.
Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get arrested. Yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed. Yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to That One Studio. The What Are You Made Up Show. It's your boy C Rock in the building. Got another great guest for you today. But I just want to let everybody know, man, that I'm thinking about all of you. I'm thinking about your success. I'm thinking about your, you know, the potential that you have inside of you that you may not know and be aware of. And I'm always encouraging you from afar to become that one, right? To know that you're unstoppable, to live in the life of your dreams. So welcome to the show today. I have a guest for you today. We're going to go through his journey and find out what he's made of. His name is Arvid Kahl. Did I pronounce the last name right?
Yep, that's right.
Arvid Kahl's in the building. And Arvid is an entrepreneur, a writer, a maker, and a bootstrapping fanatic. He sold a software business for a life-changing amount of money and has since built a media business that helps founders help themselves. Arvid, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. What does your shirt say, man? It says, building, for those watching, building in public.
That's right.
All right. What's that all about?
You know, you build the thing you're doing in front of the people you do it for. You know, like for a lot of software people, a lot of software entrepreneurs, they go into their little basement and they sit there for 6 months and they build the thing that they need to build and that they think everybody else needs. And then they put it out there and nobody wants it because it's just not built with them and for them. Building in public is my approach where I think, you know, share every little step, every up, every down, every vulnerable moment, every happy moment. And you build momentum, you build investment. People invest their attention, their money, and even just looking at you and looking at your journey. They put that into you and you give back to them. And the moment you launch your thing, the moment you need customers, the moment you need investors, other people, partners, whatever, you've been there already. You've already built the whole thing in front of them. It's so much easier for them to say yes to the thing at that moment.
Yeah. You know what this reminds me of? And I'm going to ask you this question in a minute. So we'll save the Woody Made Up question in a second. But it reminds me of the fact that introversion versus extroversion, the relationship between the two, and the fact that it's a non-survival behavior to introvert.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, you know, extroverting so can you speak to that for a second?
Yeah, for sure. Because I consider myself an introvert on almost every single level. I come from a technical background. I was always a coder. I was always a reader, a thinker, and I never considered myself to be good at sales or marketing or just the outreach, like I'm talking to people to begin with. Always felt problematic, which is hilarious now that I have a podcast and a media business. But let's just put that aside for a second. I considered myself to be completely introverted on all accounts. And what I learned over time is that that's absolutely not true. I don't think any of us is fully extroverted or fully introverted. It's not even a spectrum. I think it's highly situational. Like the thing that I love, that's talking about businesses, it's talking about self-empowerment, software engineering for that matter, right? Whatever it is, the moment I start talking about this, I just open up, right? I don't care who's listening. Could be two people, could be 20 million people. I don't care. I just love this stuff so much. And that's where my extroversion, my situational extroversion just comes out. So
yeah,
you're absolutely right. Like being completely closed off, that's a problem. That's a survival problem. But
yeah,
if you have something you care about and you're willing to share it with people, it is so easy to go to a conference of whatever topic you care about. The people there, you have something in common. It's so easy to talk to them. Go to a conference for something you have no idea about, you feel like you're the odd man out, obviously, because you are, right? So
yeah,
that's where this shines very clearly to me.
Yeah, oh yeah, phenomenal, man. Well, so Arvid, what would you say you're made of?
You know what? I consider this a little bit, because that's the introversion that kicks in, the reflection part. But honestly, I think I'm made of a lot of very strong opinions, very weakly, very loosely held. That's what I can best describe myself of. Like, over my whole journey as a founder, as somebody building stuff, I always knew what was the right thing to do, but it was very easy to convince me of a better way the moment I understood it, right? That's kind of what it is. Once I set a goal, I try to get there as strongly and as fiercely as I can. But if my assumptions are wrong, I'm super willing to correct them. No problem there.
Yeah, you know, I like that. I like that. You're committed and convicted in what your decision is, but then you're also open to learning. You know, the number one barrier to learning is to think you know everything.
Yeah.
Because you don't, then from there, you don't, once you make that decision, then you don't observe.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You close yourself off. That's another problem, right? If you don't let new knowledge and other people's, maybe these other people are not as expert in the field that you are in, right? An expert in, you consider yourself an expert in. But they have a different perspective, and that alone is valuable. So I try to never close myself off, which is funny because the moment you're an author, the moment you're somebody, I really don't like the influencer tag because it's been, you know, co-opted by people that I don't want to be like. But you know what I mean? The moment you have influence, the moment you have a voice in a community, it's kind of hard not to stand behind your words and defend them against other opinions, right? Because you have to have kind of a profile there. But I try to, that's the building a public part. Hey, if you embrace everybody else's opinion, if you have conversations with people, if you allow them to correct you and you don't just yell at them, you actually say, yeah, this is interesting. Let me think about this. The perception of you also changes into, okay, this is a person with faults, obviously, but those faults make them relatable, right? So that's what it is. Like it creates a relatability layer and that allows for more relationships to happen, which is, that's kind of what I'm into now, like with the media business and everything. I love building software. I love building projects, but talking to people, learning from people, hanging out with people, customers, prospective investors, or whatever it might be, just other peers in the field, that gives me so much energy. It's one of the most wonderful things I've ever experienced.
Yeah, man. Me too. Me too. I you know what? I'm on a weekend and I'm not talking to as many people as I do during the week. I feel it. I don't feel as up as I normally am. So no, yeah. I'm with you on that. So what was the company, the type of company that you built and sold?
So the first one that I built and sold was called Feedback Panda. I co-founded that with my girlfriend at the time. I still live with her, so she's still my girlfriend. And we built a business within 2 years. That was an online English teaching business. It's kind of, she was an online English teacher because we were both living at that time in Berlin, in Germany. That's where I'm from. We have since moved to Ontario in Canada. That's where she's from. So you kind of can probably piece the things together, how that worked out. She was working from there. She had a leg injury, couldn't do her regular job, which was an opera singer. She is an opera singer, trained opera singer.
Wow.
But you can't really sing if your leg doesn't work, if you can't stand, if you can't walk. Like it's hard to perform, right? So she needed a job, and that job was online English teaching, just for Chinese kids. Like you go online, you teach them English by immersion, which was adorable. Like the amount of finger puppet stuff she did and you know, the singing. It was really a blessed atmosphere in a home, but it was a grueling job, like 10, 12 hours of in front of camera teaching individual lessons to kids. And then on top of this, 8-10 hours of work every single day on average, she had to do 2 hours of admin work, like just to, you know, type out what she taught the kids. So the parents, you know, Chinese parents, they're pretty much, you know, tiger parents. They really want to know what's going on. So you had to type it out in perfect detail and say what they can do to kind of exercise and practice and whatever. That was a lot of work, completely unpaid, but also completely relevant to even get paid for the actual teaching in the first place. So 2 hours of work. And as a software engineer, I was like, you're typing the same stuff over and over. Let's automate this. So I automated it for her. We built something together. We opened it up to the greater teacher group of people, and it was like tens of thousands of teachers. And all of a sudden we had a software business. And that grew to, I think, like roughly $60,000 in monthly recurring revenue over 2 years. And that was just mid 2019 when we decided, hey, let's sell this thing. This is worth millions.
A lot of people don't realize. They think tech, software, it's got to be like millions of dollars a month in income. Like 60,000 MRR is phenomenal for a SaaS company.
For two people, we had no employees.
And
it was like a 95% margin business. Like we had expenses in the $4,000-$5,000 a month. It was pretty substantial, but it was still pretty risky. And that's the other side of it, right? Because if you have a tech business that makes millions a month, well, there is a lot of parties involved and you have investors and you have money here, money there. But if it's just two people, like the bus factor in a business like this, what would happen if I would get hit by a bus is extreme for two people. So we tried to kind of diversify and de-risk the thing. And the best way to do it is to actually sell it. So we sold. And that was great. I can tell you that.
How long did it take you to build it? The initial part that you could use.
Oh, that took me like 2 weeks.
It's an
iterative process, right? You built the first prototype, you use it. We used it together. She used it for her own purposes.
Yeah.
And then she's like, hey, this kind of sucks. And I was like, yeah, I know. I built it. So I built a better version of that. And then over time, I think like 2-3 weeks after that first version was kind of done and fixed, we allowed other people on the platform, because I'm a software engineer by trade, right? I know how to build these things. So from the beginning, I built it as something that other people could have also used, not just my girlfriend.
Yeah, scalable, right?
Yeah, extremely scalable, because, you know, like the marginal cost of another user in a software business like this is almost zero, which like, you know, if you make 60K a month and only 5K go into hosting or whatever, it can tell you like how well this scales. So yeah, it took me like maybe a month altogether to get the first paying customers on the platform. But from there, it was like just a straight line up and to the right. It was great.
And so that like, what was it like when you I guess sold the company? Were you attaching? First of all, there's a few questions I have here. Number one, were you attaching your identity to your product that you built, your baby? And then did you kind of feel like you lost your identity a little bit, or did you separate that from the beginning?
Yeah, all of the above. Like the fact that you called it baby makes it especially interesting, because that was a project between my girlfriend and I, right? Yeah. It had this added like meta layer, meta connotation of this actually being something that we brought into the world together. It was just a business. It doesn't love you back, right? That's what kind of distinguishes a business baby from a real baby. But it was something we built together, and it was, there was grief involved in giving it over. Like we felt after we sold the business, and like I'll get into the reasons why we sold in a second. Like both of us, we dealt with actual loss, like actual grief. Grief in the sense of, where's my purpose gone? Because my purpose was helping these online English teachers, one of the most adorable kind of customer you can have, right? These are non-technical people who love teaching children, who love being like outright friendly and funny and interesting, right? They were kind. They were often working second, third jobs because they could barely make ends meet, because teachers getting paid are not getting paid squat anywhere, right? So you're trying to serve these underpaid, underappreciated people. And then you get to, and you make money, and it's great. And then you give this whole thing away. And now all of this, the thing you built and the people you helped, are somebody else's thing. And you have nothing other than a lot of money, which is great. But that money does not compensate for the lack of purpose that I felt. So we both felt this, and we both struggled with that particular grief. I quickly turned it into the media business that I've been building. It's called the Bootstrap Founder, because from the start, I wanted this to be about, you know, how people can get to this level of success by just bootstrapping using their own funds. And I started writing. Like, that was my way out. My way out was writing. And even before we sold, I was in a pretty tight spot. I was in mid burnout, pretty much. Like, I was really in a deep emotional level of turmoil, because I was the only technical founder in the business, which is not too hard with two people, right? So it's just me. I was the tech guy. I had to deal with all the data issues. We had 5,000 customers at that point, and they all would write tickets to me. Right. So whenever there was an issue, I would get the avalanche. I still have like intercom, the little chat bubble PTSD, where whenever the bing sound comes up, I physically respond to this still.
Yeah.
Like, to this day, and this is 2019, right? 5 years of time has not healed that particular wound of me hearing the bubble and thinking, oh no, I got to fix this problem. So yeah, I was in a pretty deep well of like, fell down that well of emotional problems there, but I got myself out of it by writing. By actually selling the business, that just, you know, alleviated that particular problem. And by finding something that allowed me to be more involved with the community of people and not just like solipsistically focused on my own stuff.
Yeah.
That made a big difference there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I don't want to go into huge detail here, obviously, but just overall general, when you had that kind of money come into you, right? When you're selling the business, what was your thoughts when it first, like, it closed and you had the money, number one? And number two, what did you do with the money as far as like in general, right? Investing or making sure that money was well taken care of so that it can make more money.
Yeah, that was the first thought, was like, oh no, I got to keep this now. that was the first thought.
Yeah.
Got to protect this. It's like you level up your issue. Well, like, I guess the first feeling that I had was, I thought this would feel differently. Like, I thought this would be like a moment of, you know, angelic, like triumphant kind of sounds happening around you. But it really is just a number refreshing from very little to a lot on a bank account on a website somewhere. And then nothing changes. That was the feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
But consequentially, it was like, now we got to protect this. Like, we diversified. We got rid of the thing that may have grown even further. So we made a cut consciously and took what it was worth today. We got to make sure that asset appreciates more. So what we did was not much, because it was like, when all the money hit the account, I think it was December 2019, and you probably remember what happened like a couple days after that, which was the world exploded. So we had, with the pandemic and everything, we didn't really have anything other than investing it like financially into the financial markets, into the S&P 500 and maybe a couple companies that we understood. There was a fund that is bootstrapper specific. It's called the Calm Company Fund. that we invested in because we knew the people around it. The guy who's actually the general partner at the fund was also one of the people who sold their business to the acquiring company that we sold our business to.
Yeah.
So like when we did our due diligence on the acquirer, we called him up and asked him, hey, is that all right? Like, did the sale go through well? Is that all legit? And he said, yeah, sure, it's great. And it was, which was nice. But he started the fund for companies like ours who were completely bootstrapped, self-funded, and just slowly, calmly growing their business, you know, not the kind of virality seeking mass market domination companies that you see in tech so much, but really small, super niche businesses like safari travel planning SaaS businesses, or, you know, like for car mechanics in a certain area, like connecting them with vendors, that kind of stuff, like really down to earth specific businesses. And that's the one of the funds we invested in as well, that are really also aimed at companies that we understood. So that's where we put our investments into places that we knew.
Yeah. And then prior to starting the media company, I'm going to get into the media company in a second. I want to know more about that. But also, did you have a feeling of like, maybe we just got lucky, and can we replicate this success, and can we build something again? And
this has been my driving force for the last couple of years. Like, I know it's a fallacy. I know it's a fallacy to look at my life and think of it as these discrete accomplishments, because that's not how it works. Like, realistically, it's all connected, and one thing that I do today may lead to some outcome 20 years from now. Who knows? Can't chase it. It's not there yet, right? What am I going to say? But in a way, the feeling of I have to prove myself that it was not a fluke, that has been not just with me, but a lot with the founders that I talk to. I have a podcast where I interview people who went through similar journeys as well. And I was talking to Patrick Campbell. He sold a company called ProfitWell, which was like an analytics tracking for payment processor information, like what's your MRR, where's your churn, these kind of things, right? It's like ChartMogul or Bear Metrics, these kind of businesses. And they had a product called ProfitWell. He sold this to Paddle, the payment company, for $200 million. And if you sell your business for $200 million, I think you're pretty good at what you're doing. Yet, the moment he sold, he was like, okay, now I got to do it again, and I have to do it bigger. Because this was probably just a fluke, and I have to share with people that I can do it again. It's bizarre. Like, this exists on every single level, and it's equally pointless to follow, but it has been very strong on my mind as well over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I try to suppress it because
I can feel this. Now, mine wasn't a tech company, but I had an 8-figure company. We're doing 10 to 13 million a year in revenue, and I'm now doing something different, and I'm like, can I do this again? And was it lucky? Was it just because of the people that I had, or with this and that? But then I start to realize, wait a minute, I was there and I'm still here.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm better than I was before.
Yeah. It's like, part of it, so right?
You got to be a better version of yourself right now, Arvid, than you were when you first started, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think once I embrace the fact that the only person holding me accountable to that kind of stuff is myself, I just let it go. It's like, I'm going to build something that I can enjoy doing every single day I work on it. And that has been my media business, my podcast, and my newsletter, and my writing. I've been writing a couple of books because I just want to help people just help themselves. I don't necessarily need them to even pay me anything. I just want to share stuff with them. And in the end, if they remember that I kind of helped them a little bit, I'm perfectly fine with that in terms of compensation, right? That's kind of what a podcast is. You have it's hard to monetize to begin with, particularly when you start. Yeah. Over time, that gets easier, and I'm at a point where it's profitable, but I started it just really out of, I just want to give back to this community. The indie hacker community is what it's called, right? The indie software business community. That is a very tight-knit, close-knit group of people who just help each other all the time. And I felt I benefited from it a lot. So I kind of started this enterprise. But it's profitable, so that's great.
Yeah, 100%. And it's kind of therapy for you, isn't it? When you write talk. And I find, like, you know, I podcast, man, I've been on over 1,000, probably 1,700, including my own show, in the last 5 years.
Wow.
And it's been therapy to me.
Yes. You know? It really is. I think therapy is another thing. Like, that's something on the personal side I've started a couple of weeks ago, just to deal not just with the business stuff, because that is exactly what it is, like podcasts and that is business therapy, because you can't talk to like a professional psychologist about like MRR and these kind of things.
It just
doesn't work with them. You need people that understand this. But on a personal level, you also need somebody who gets like where your problems, where your challenges are, how they are connected, like where does trauma come from and all that. You can talk to your business friends about this. And often there are obviously similar experiences. I think we are all driven by something that is buried deep in our past as entrepreneurs. There's just something there. I don't know what it is, but something in there just drives us, keeps us trying to succeed and overcome obstacles and challenges. But on the personal side, I highly recommend it, particularly if you're a founder or creator and you're kind of doing your own thing. You need somebody to talk to who gets you, and therapy can do that.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so the media company, give me the mission of it, and what's the purpose of it, and how, like, what's the business model?
So, and this kind of harks back to these strong opinions loosely held. Initially, I really wanted to build the perfect podcast for bootstrappers, for people who take no external funding, build businesses mostly in the software digital world, because that's what I get, and then share journeys, share insights, how to market, how to sell, how to build, like all these things. And it still is that, but the Bootstrap founder, that's the media property, has gotten some competition in my own life because I started a new software business along the side. It's called PodScan. I do like media monitoring for podcasts, like where people mentioned, all that kind of stuff. And that business just last week, as recording this, got some funding. Bootstrap are compatible funding, but it's not technically bootstrapped anymore. So I'm kind of amending my perspective because it's not VC funding, right? It didn't give me millions. Yeah. It was just a six-figure deal, but it is... You know, I see myself growing out of that phase of my life where bootstrapping was everything and the only thing. And now it's one more thing in my repertoire of things that I can do. And the podcast has shifted more towards being more inclusive of every kind of entrepreneur, no matter what they are, because that's the reality out there.
Yeah. Right? And, you know, Arvid, here's the thing, too. Like, one of the things you didn't deal with was culture, dealing with people and helping people achieve their goals too, and align it with the company's goals and building team and system process with people actual. So like now you're experiencing that. How's that journey
exactly
going?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's as frightening as it is exciting to just level up and move the goalpost from this was my challenge that I figured out how to deal with now to, oh my God, I don't even know what challenges lay in front of me at this point. But the benefit is, again, like you said, you have this whole backlog of experiences, of accomplishments. Like I have an audience in on social media in the community of like a six-figure audience, which is great because I know among these people is someone who can help me with any problem that I have. Right? I've been building this as I've been building my businesses. And now I see the synergistic effects between the audience, the business, the media property, the newsletter, the podcast, the writings, the books, like all of this comes together and just being this momentum, this forward force. So I know there's going to be stuff happening. I know it's going to be hard, but I know I have every help I could possibly get.
Right.
And that works for me.
Right. So let's put I want to talk about that new tech new software but the media company itself, you have a podcast, you write. So do you have like a Substack or where do you put your writing?
So it's on ConvertKit. I have a ConvertKit. Just a regular ConvertKit account where I just post twice a week. I have an interview podcast, an interview episode. I have a solo podcast, solo episode. And I turn those into newsletters as well. And I have a blog where those are transcribed into the blog. And one of them, the interview goes on YouTube. So there's a YouTube version, an audio version that is just hosted on Transistor if I'm just a podcast, a text version. And all of these are kind of interlinked. So I create one thing or two things a week, an interview and a solo show. Solo is just me talking about my journey. Interview is the expert talking about theirs. And all of these go out in all different kinds of properties, but it's the same exact content, just in a different medium.
Yeah. Okay. And then how's X been treating you? Twitter/X.
I will never call it X. I'm just gonna say it's hard, isn't it? Now I'm just old school in that regard. Twitter has been my number one place to find my particular community. Like the indie hacker software entrepreneur community is still very loyal to X or Twitter. Like they hang out there. They have their friends there. They have the DMs, the backlogs of DMs. Honestly, Twitter got me my first job in tech back in 2012. Like somebody reached out to me. Hey, I've seen what you did on your GitHub, like the source code you open source somewhere. We really like this. We use the same tech stack. Want to work for us? And I was just sitting somewhere in Germany. I was still a student like for political science and philosophy at that time, because it's kind of what I wanted to do at that point in time. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to drop these studies. I'm going to fly to San Francisco because that looks like the better thing, the better gig. But yeah, so that's where it started. And I will not give up the platform.
Do you post on there often?
Oh, every single day. Yeah.
Okay. So you are like, are you following along with the new algorithm changes and what works and what doesn't, threads and this and that? Like
what I've learned, and this again is a strong opinions weekly held, is I will actively try to avoid doing the thing that everybody else is doing. in terms of optimization, because we talked about like transactional exchanges and stuff. Mm-hmm. That is exactly what this is. Like if Twitter is pushing threads, now you have to write threads. Okay, so does it make your content any better? No, it just kind of changes its shape and you try to be more clickbaity. And I think authenticity is something that I really value in the people that I follow, that I interact with, and in my own experience of the platform, in my own projection of my personal brand onto the platform, to use the industry term, I guess. And I try to avoid like following these trends really actively. I do video on occasion. I just walk outside, walk the puppy, and I just take a little video of myself and a, you know, like some brain fart I may have had or whatever, yeah. Just to authentically represent this is what I do, but I don't have a strategy in a sense that I don't have like a list of things that need to be done by this day or whatever. That I don't think I can authentically represent my own life following these things. So I do follow it. I know how it works, and I actively try to not do it.
Well, my content journey is if I'm on vacation or something, I'll take a lot of content, right?
Yeah. Yep.
But when I'm in my house, I work from my house. My studio is down below my house, right by the pool here.
Yep.
And like, there's not much interesting that goes on besides podcasting and phone calls. So I'm like, some days I'm like, I don't know what to post, man. People would think my life is kind of boring.
Yeah,
it's not boring to me though, because I get to talk to people like you over and over again, different strangers and build relationships. So I love it, but I don't know that I, as far as the content goes. So
I feel it. I feel you 100%. You know? Same thing. You know what I found? Yeah. I found anything I do has the potential to be content. And if I do stuff on a computer, if I do some coding or I write a nice email, like a marketing email, sales email to someone, I always look at it through the lens of, could this be instructional to somebody who's like 12 steps behind me on my journey? Somebody like 2 years ago, where I was 2 years ago, somebody is right now. Could this help them?
If that's the
case, take a screenshot, like I blur out the names and stuff, and I say, I'm just writing this email. What do you guys think? Is this going to convert? And then I show them the result, right? I try to involve them in even the mundane stuff, because what I think is mundane is super exciting to a newbie.
It's true.
Right?
It's true.
So you never know.
I got to start thinking about that. Yeah, because I have a hard time. Like when I wrote my book, back here, Rocket Fuel, while I was going through the process of editing and rereading, I started thinking like, dude, everybody knows this stuff. I didn't even appreciate it anymore.
Yes,
but yet when people read it, they were like, wow, this is the greatest thing. And so you're 100% right with that. Mm-hmm. You got to appreciate the things that you've already learned, and you see it on a day-to-day basis as something new to someone else.
Yep.
So Arvid, I'm really interested in this new company that you have, because obviously I'm in the podcast business. We have the PR company, that one agency. We help people get on top 5% podcast, teach them how to leverage the attention, the relationship with the founder and all that. Tell me about what problem this software solves and how you're solving it.
Yeah. So it is a consequence of a need that I had for my own thing. Obviously, that's
which
the founder
talking,
where the
best tech comes from, right?
That's exactly what it is. So I built a little voicemail tool, like just in November 2023. I wanted to build like voicemail for podcasts. There's SpeakPipe out there that a lot of people use that already, but I wanted to build a modern version of this. And I did. The product is called podline.fm. And it didn't really go anywhere because it's a very specific thing for very specific needs for very specific people, right? Only podcast hosts with a lot of a sizable audience would ever need such a tool, because only people who already have a lot of people that want to talk to them need a tool to kind of manage that. So I was like, well, who are these people? Who can I sell this to, right? Who are these podcast hosts? Where can I find them? What's their email? What's their website? I was like, there's no tool for this. Like, there's no tool to really dive exactly into the podcasts out there and tell me in this episode, this guy mentioned this tool. Like I wanted to SpeakPipe, right? I wanted to see every single episode where somebody said the word SpeakPipe, and that did not exist, because few podcasts actually have transcripts going on. Transcript is always like an after the fact kind of work, right? You have to put it through some kind of transcription engine, and then you have to correct it, and then you have to put it into the podcast. Most people don't do this. I think 0.2% of all podcast episodes out there actually have a transcript.
Which, so just to be clear, this is kind of like a Google search.
It's Google Alerts. It's Google Alerts for podcast mentions of
podcasts. Yeah. So you're searching for a keyword, topic, concept, person through
or
the podcasts.
Even just the theme. Yeah. I'm into AI. I understand like the LLM AI technology, right? Running these models, these language models on a server and asking it a question of a piece of text and giving you back an answer. I've incorporated that into PodScan. So PodScan is not just a keyword trigger kind of alert system where you can put your keywords in. That is the base functionality, but you can also ask a question of the episode. Like, do people talk about my brand in a positive way or in a negative way. And depending on that answer, it actually gives you an alert or it doesn't. And the necessity, the underlying necessity for this is to actually transcribe the episode. So that is something that is super expensive, which is why I got funding for this company. I needed a way to actually pay for these computers, these cloud servers that have like a GPU attached, a graphics processor where all the AI stuff runs, to reliably transcribe episodes, because nobody does this. Apple has been starting to do this very recently, but they keep it in their walled garden. They don't make it available to marketers. Yeah. They don't make it available to anybody or podcast booking agencies. Like, you cannot get these transcripts. You can only like listen to the episode and see the little text go by, but you cannot search them. Well, I'm building the thing where you can. And every single day I ingest like 100,000 episodes and I just transcribe them with the massive cluster of like AI systems. And I put them into my database where it's searchable, alertable, and all that kind of stuff. That's the business I'm building.
Yeah. I love it. Did you already talk to Todd about this? Because I think some reason.
I think that's kind of how we kind of started to mingle there. Yeah,
because he was like, he called me one day and he's like, dude, C-Rock, you gotta talk to this guy. He's like, he has this thing where he can scan like podcasts. And I'm like, dude, that's freaking ingenious. How can I get involved and collaborate with this dude? Yep. So yeah, I'm glad you came on. Now it's hit me. So so we're definitely going to be following up with this and exploring collaboration and synergy, man, because I love what you're doing. I love the method that you're taking to do these things. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that you have big beliefs, or you talked about firm beliefs, but you're also willing to change those things. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of people I want to hang out with, Arvin.
Well, it's really appreciated. And I really like you and your work as well. You're the kind of person that I want to hang out with. So that worked pretty well.
Thank you. Well, look, hey, so where can people, you want to send them to Twitter, X, or where do you want to send them?
Yeah, I guess you'll find all my work, like all the things that I'm working on Twitter, or X, as the cool kids call it now, I guess. It's Arvid Kahl, A-R-V-I-D-K-A-H-L. That's my full name, and that's it. And you know, podscan.fm is the product that I'm working on, but the Bootstrap Founder, podcast, whatever. You'll find it. Come to my Twitter. Talk to me. My DMs are open. I chat with people all the time. That's kind of what I like about this, you know, being public, building in public life. So, yeah. Find me on Twitter.
Listen, I take time out of the equation, so I'm actually following you right now on Twitter. So I'm hitting follow. Bang. There we go. Now we're connected. You can follow me back. Mm-hmm. Hey, so what final question here as we wind this down. What is your goal for exit for this? Like, do you have something that – do you do that? Do you put some kind of projected thing out there, or do you just roll until – organically happens.
I think the media business, that's just going to stay my thing. I just want to keep talking to people forever, right? And even if it doesn't make me money, I'm just still going to do it, because that's the way I connect.
Yeah.
For PodScan, I look at it like an eight figure exit. If I hit 8-9 figures, that would be great. But eight is the level where I start thinking about like actually selling the business.
Because yeah.
I know that this business is going to be extremely valuable. Like, I'm going through 100%. The backlog of 170 million podcast episodes.
Yeah.
And for the first time transcribing things that never been transcribed before. Like, there's gold in that there hills, right?
So
I look at eight figures. That's when I'm going to start thinking about it.
All right, man. Well, I'm rooting for you. I love it. Keep going. Thanks for being here, Arvid. Appreciate you, man.
Absolutely appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, hang tight while I wrap this up. Folks, listen, thank you so much for joining us here on the What He Made Up Show, live from That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock signing off. Make sure you go like, subscribe, do all the things you know you're supposed to do. And then once PodScan comes out, you can start scanning our episodes for different things you want to know, all through 700-some episodes we have now. And so we're going to make sure that you know about that platform. And also, make sure you go to my Instagram, Mikey C-Rock. We're putting a lot of great content out for you to engage with, learn from, and make sure to be reminded that you're unstoppable. To live in the life of your dreams. Until next time, it's your boy C-Rock. Beat that one.
Music licensing reimagined.